Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that's on a mission to make America think again. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to put the information out there because it's what happens in the shadows, folks, that makes the world go round. So come, listen, learn, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. Tonight, unfortunately, we had an environmental group lined up that needed to cancel at the last minute. Something came up for them, and we'll reschedule at some point. But so tonight, you get me and Liberty Jones, which is amazing. We're going to talk about what's ever on our minds, and at least one of us has a really great mind, and the other one's a lot of fun. I won't tell you which one is which, but welcome, Liberty.
Thank you so much. It's such a privilege to be here, per usual. How are you doing?
It's my honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
So let's talk. Let's talk about what's the number one thing on your mind these days? Because I know we talk off the air, and you've been very excitable lately about several different issues. So let's talk about one of them.
Okay, well, I think what's most on my mind, this is a fun little societal pop culture moment. Did you watch tonight's football game?
I did watch it tonight. Yeah.
Did you see
the
poor
Commanders? They should have put in the cheerleaders in the second half. They probably would have done better. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. What are your thoughts on Trump being booed unanimously?
He was booed. I missed that.
He was booed by the entire crowd to the point where the announcer had to tell them to stop booing.
Oh, my God. I don't know how I missed that. I must have been getting ready for the show. I saw him interviewed. But I think, you know, the things have turned. I think that we've seen recently with the Democratic victories in Virginia and New Jersey and New York City, you know. That things are turning, and I think that this is just a sign of the times. And hope it is. You know, I'll tell you one thing that bothers me. It bothers me to turn on Fox News and hear them call this man that was just elected mayor of New York City a communist, a jihadist. I mean, I don't know how it's so racist.
It is horrible. But, you know, we're not doing much better because we call Trump a fascist.
Yeah, that's true. We do. And you know, that's one thing that I think we don't realize is that the left, the extreme left, and the people that want revenge on Trump are just as important to the Democratic Party as the right is to the Republican Party. And we need to step off somewhere, right?
Yeah, they fuel each other. I think they fuel each other for sure.
That the 11th is Veterans Day. It's 2 days away. I want to thank everybody that's ever worn a uniform because we all know that freedom's not free, especially my brother who was a combat veteran, Major Paul Brown, and my great-great-great-great-grandfather, who enlisted in the Continental Army when he was 17. Oh, you're
back.
Okay, well, maybe you can do this then.
False alarm. We can do it.
Yeah, okay. I hope that you all heard what I said about veterans. Thank you, veterans, for all you do.
Thank you. So
Trump's being booed.
He is, which is a good thing because it means that at least, you know, it's interesting you didn't see that off Fox News.
Yes. It's horrible. He's killing more Venezuelans. I protested a war in Vietnam because I didn't want to go over, and I was 18 and I was A1 status, and I didn't want to go over and shoot people that I had no problem with. You know, I never had a problem with a Vietnamese person. I actually liked their food very much. And so I didn't want to go to Vietnam. Well, I don't have any problem with Venezuelans either. So I don't know what the deal is.
Don't either, especially because the Venezuelan government was very helpful towards Trump.
Yes.
They actually helped a lot. So it's really sad to see this happen. But, you know, it's not like politicians in South America, especially in Venezuela, and have been notoriously for the people as of recent times. So.
Yeah, I know. And I know that there was a, and maybe we should talk about this for a minute. There was a horrible incident in Brazil,
There
which you
was.
told me all about, where they just executed a bunch of people that they assumed were drug dealers. They didn't try them, they didn't charge them. They just basically chased them into the woods and executed them, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So a week before this happened, they found a building in the economic capital of Brazil, São Paulo, on, let's say, what is the economic street of Brazil, an entire building that was full of these gang members that we refer to as the PCC, that were working solely on money laundering for the gang activity. They closed down that building a week before this all went down. So this was huge in terms of like law, criminal breakthroughs, because, a lot of people believe that these gangs run Brazil. And for a really long time, they basically are the police. They work very closely hand in hand. So it was beautiful to find the source of the money laundering because it means that there wasn't going to be as much payoff towards the police. Maybe they would actually do their jobs. A lot of people are saying there's no correlation because that's São Paulo and the gang activity that was killed was in Rio de Janeiro. And so they say that obviously, like white and red gangs, they don't get along between states. But I think there is definitely a correlation. And that's what makes the cause even more interesting that this happened because I think the police definitely knew who was part of the gang and who wasn't. However, it doesn't justify what happened because it was an absolute atrocity. 140 plus killed, and then they dragged the body onto the streets so people could recognize who they knew and who they didn't. It's not a lot of these sites, a lot of these organizations that are working towards equal rights and, black rights, they're very opposed to this in Brazil. But a large amount of the population is also very in support. They came out with reports before that said that around, and these are loose numbers because I don't remember the exact, but it was like 76% of people in the slums were in support of the police interference, which is pretty high approval rate for what they did. But obviously, the media is going to botch it. And what happens, I have a lot to say about this. I'm very interested in
Please.
South American politics. But what happens usually is that when the police come to sweep the slums and what are now called communities, to be politically correct, in Brazil, they all run towards the woods. There's a wonderful movie called City of God. I don't know if you've watched it, but it
No, I
captures
haven't.
this, that whenever there are sweeps of the slums of the where they're looking for the criminal gangs, they all run towards the woods because no one can find them. They climb the trees, no one can find them. So this time the police were waiting in the woods, and everybody who came, they expected to be criminals and they just shot them all. Obviously, there probably was some innocent people in there, but it's the country is very split right now. There's protests in every single state saying that this was very against human rights and that we had no say in who was captured, who was killed, you just killed them. And then there's a large percentage of the country who is very in support of this because it's the first big anti-gang police run stand we've had historically ever, or the largest. And so the country is very split, and I honestly don't know how I fully feel about it. I think obviously, I'm a future lawyer, so I really think that trials, innocent until proven guilty, right? But at the same time, if it is going to help something, if the criminals are at least going to be scared, I guess there is a benefit for the people if prior to this, the reports came out that they were 76% in approval for this. Maybe it's not as bad, but I don't know. I'm a people person, so I don't want to see anybody dead, is how I
Well,
feel. What do you
yeah,
think?
no, and I certainly understand that. And I think One thing we don't understand, I think I told you this once before, but I lived in a neighborhood, a segregated neighborhood growing up. It was the Italian neighborhood. And there were vigilantes. They kept people out of the neighborhood they just didn't like. And that usually meant black people, for example. And my grandmother would have told you that that those people were not good people. They were not nice people, but she supported them because she thought they kept her safe. That's what she thought. And you know, she thought they were all the bad people were members of the mafia, and black people were out to do I don't know what to her or whatever. But she was a very smart woman, but not very well educated, not very well informed. And you know, and I think that the scary thing I see in all this is what's going on in America, where Trump is trying to convince people that everybody coming into our country is a criminal, a murderer, a rapist. And I'll tell you what, the people that are coming into our country today are the same people that have always come into to our country. They're people looking for a better life. They're people escaping political retribution or you know, they're under some other threat. They're the same people that have always come. So this idea that they're all, you know, that they're empty in the jails and they're sending them in to America. You know, we know for a fact that immigrants do not commit any more crimes than the general population commits. So, you know, they're the same. They are us. And it's I think it's just horrifying that this administration is going so far out of their way to convince people that murdering Venezuelans who are in the Caribbean indiscriminately because you assume they're drug dealers, or you know, what seems to me to be the same situation, or having the ICE people from ICE just pick up people of color, and then you have to prove who you are. I mean, that's what the Nazis did.
If
They
they
picked
let
up
you prove,
people,
if they
huh?
allow you to prove yourself.
Yes, that yes. And you know, my daughter Trisha in Chicago, she the ICE came into one of the neighborhoods there, and she was telling me that one of her friends went out to see what was going on, and they arrested him and detained him. Until, you know, they decided that, you know, he was a nice white boy and they could let him go. You know, it's just horrible. And I wonder how much of it, and I don't know how much you sense of this as a young person, but you know, racism was always a part of my past. The 1960s and the 1970s were volatile times. In the civil rights movement here in the United States. Did we push it all underground and now it's coming back? You think that's happening, or is this something new?
To my knowledge, I think that people are always going to find somebody to blame and somebody to put lower than them if that's what brings them power. So I don't know if this is something new. I think racism has always been a very big part of American politics and like societal discourse, as it is everywhere. And I think that if anything, we've just found a new group to attack. And it's really sad because these people are very humble. And I don't mean humble in terms of humble beginnings. I mean humble in terms of hard-working, good people. And I can't speak for everyone, but a really big majority of them are. So it's really sad because they're not the type of people to fight back. They're the type of people to understand and feel like they are doing wrong. Is what I've heard. I have a friend of my mother's actually has been interviewed by ICE a couple times. And she actually initially was a Trump supporter because she believed he was going to do good for the economy. So it's really sad too, because we saw in the election that a really big part of the people who did vote for him was the Latino community. So they believed in this person and now they're being attacked by him. And honestly, I think last week's podcast brought me a lot of hope because I think, and we can learn this from Brazil as well, that when people suffer together, they find a sense of community and they learn to be more compassionate towards each other. So I really do believe, and I think he spoke a lot about that, about how even though we're in dark times, that beautiful congressman we had, that unity is going to prevail from this based on his historical knowledge, is what he painted to me. And I think that's a really fair point. I think that we see that happen in Brazil where people, for example, you said that, they feel protected. Your grandmother felt protected by people who are notoriously known as criminals. I know I'm a little all over the place, but I have a lot of thoughts I'm trying to articulate. People are protected. In the Brazilian slums, these big criminals who are the ones who were mass murdered, who they're happy about, they used to sign schools saying that they were not able to be touched. They suffered. They were all part of the same community, so they knew they had to protect each other. Here, I feel like America is a country with a lot of privilege. And I think that, we see that in the Black community. We see that in the people of color community overall. There's a very strong sense of community, of unity. And unfortunately, I don't think we see that across different races in this country. So I think that now that we've shifted towards more of political divide and not just color divide, that there is going to be a large percentage of the United States that will unite. That's the hope that he really sent me last week. And so I think even though we're shifting our gaze on what we want to be racist towards, that the people who we're fighting against, they are immigrants. They don't have a platform to protest or riot against here. And so that gives us an even more sense of kind of hopelessness and need for each other, right? So I think that maybe something beautiful can come out of this. And that congressman really inspired that thought because it's true. People find unity in times of fear and in times of hopelessness. And my question to you is that something you think will happen based on your historic knowledge of, groups who have been minorities who have been attacked and politically persecuted before? Because this has happened many times. This country was built on that, as many countries were. Do you think this is a pattern that will stem into unity, or do you think this is more of a dark time that we're going to have to endure and to bring about better? Or do you think this will inspire compassion?
Well, I think you bring up a couple of really important points. When I go to Anacostia, for example, which in Washington, D.C. is primarily a black community, there is so much more unity than there is in the white community that I lived in for 30 years in Northwest Washington. People take responsibility for each other down there because they have to. They have to rely on each other. And also when I go down there, when I used to go to a meeting in Northwest, the first thing people would say is, "What have you done for me lately?" When I would go to a meeting in Anacostia, the first thing they would say to me is, "Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming to take an interest in us." There is more of an appreciation because it's more valuable to those people, and it's more important to people in underserved communities to stick together. I was just saying to my wife, it's crazy. We were driving, went to a party in our old neighborhood. And in Anacostia, there's one grocery store. In the house I lived in until a few weeks ago, there were three Whole Foods within a mile of my house and two other grocery stores. We have your, that's another point you bring up. We are spoiled. We have so much. And sometimes we don't realize, I think, what the really important things in life are. And reaching out to each other is certainly something that I think you will see more of. I think that necessity is the mother of invention, right? So the more we need each other, I think you're right. I think the more we'll come together, and I think that hopefully we will get a better country out of this. I worked for the Democratic Party, inside the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee, when Bill Clinton came up through the ranks, and we didn't like him. We thought he was too conservative. We thought he wanted to reform welfare. Oh my God, it was the sacred cow of the Democratic Party. And he reformed welfare, and we got a better welfare system out of it. So hopefully some of this stuff will pan out. But, I got to tell you, I'm tired of seeing unqualified beauty queens running things. Pam Bondi, this woman in Virginia who's won several beauty contests and says that that's going to help her be a good lawyer. That's going to help her be a good prosecutor. What she learned in the pageants and what she learned in sports. I want to know what she learned in law school. I'm tired of this. All you need to do is kiss up to this man to get a job. It's horrible, and he's doing a lot of damage. And my hope is that we just can mitigate enough of the damage behind between now and the midterm elections when we might take some control. But I got to tell you, I'm disappointed with the Democrats too. Now, you mentioned before the show, and let's talk about this a little bit, the Supreme Court. And then the latest thing on tariffs. I heard the questioning. I don't know what decisions have come out yet, but he's got everything. He's got the Congress rolling over for him. He's got the court system rolling over for him. I do not understand, for example, on the SNAP benefits, how you can have a lower court that has decided that he can't cut off SNAP benefits. Then they've skipped the appeals court, the appeals process, and they've gone straight to the Supreme Court with this. I don't understand how that works and why that's legitimate. But I can tell you there are people out there suffering. I used to work for the head of the food stamp program, a man named Bob Greenstein. He ran food stamps for the Agriculture Department under the Carter administration. They really are needed. This idea that we're giving like medical benefits to non-citizens is ridiculous. The only way you can get health benefits if you're a non-citizen is to walk into an emergency room. And I don't know what they, and that's what, and then they exploit that. Then they say, oh, we're paying for these illegal. What are you supposed to do if somebody walks into your emergency room with a gunshot wound and say, oh, I'm sorry, you're not here legally, go die in the parking lot. I mean, you have no choice but to help them. There are laws that say you have to help them. So other than that, they're not getting any kind of health benefits. There is no such thing as welfare anymore. There's only aid to families with dependent children. You have to have a dependent child, or you have to be so poor that you qualify for things like SNAP. So there is no like this idea. This was always one of my favorites, was that conservative Republicans would say, there are women out there that are just having children so they can get welfare benefits. Man, that's somebody who's never raised a child. There's not enough money in the world to make, that a good deal just to go out and have a, I wouldn't have another baby for $128 a week. That doesn't even cover what it costs to keep them, let alone what a pain in the rear end they can be when they're little. But it's just crazy. There aren't a lot of people sitting around on their ass doing nothing. Of course, there are some. There are always going to be malingerers in society. But so I think you're right. I think that I hope you're right is a better way to put it, that we will come out of this with a better sense of community. But let me ask you a question. As a young person, how much hope do you have in the future? When I was your age and I was in college, I never doubted that I would have a good job when I left college. I never had a doubt that I would have a family, own a home, raise a family someday, none of those things ever seemed out of the picture for me. And I see with my kids and with other young people, I don't know that young people feel that way. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like, your future's bright and I mean, of course you're brilliant, so that doesn't count, but do you feel like life's going to be good for you and that you're going to have all the same opportunities your parents had?
For a really long time, I did not. And I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I was really demoralized. The housing market, the question is, do I want to raise a kid in this world? Even, based on morality, it's so many fears, so many insecurities, job searches. I'm joining the job force when everybody who has been in the job force for the last 20 years is as well. So there's a lot of competition, and obviously those fears have really been crossing my mind. But I'm starting to feel less worried because I think that, as you mentioned before, politics comes in patterns, right? There's the repression and then there's the regression and the recuperation and whatnot. And so I'm feeling kind of excited to be a part of the rebuild process. At the end of the day, Trump still has 3 years left of his term, but in those 3 years is really when I'm going to be starting my life and my career. And I think there's a lot of potential to create a lot of power in these really sad, lack of times. I think I'm moving away from being mobilized by fear and feeling more empowered. I had a really big conversation with my friend the other day about Trump. And I asked him, I was like, do you feel empowered? He said, no, I don't feel empowered. Trump is empowered. He is in power. I have no power compared to him. So I was like, oh, so you don't think I'm empowered as a young woman in this world? And obviously, I worded it like that, so he was stuck in it.
Yeah, poor
You know,
guy.
it's really that. Am I really gonna let this man not only take away everything from so many people, am I gonna let him take away my hope in my personal future? No, I'm gonna stop letting him have that power. So honestly, recently, this is like a 2 week situation. I'm very excited because I know I have a lot of people to inspire and two beautiful people to work with. And I think that this is the time to create change. So obviously, if we're thinking about things logistically, there are a lot of fears in the way, economic fears, immigration fears, all types of fears. I can't even like list them without sounding incoherent because student loans, like housing, everything. How am I going to eat? Right. But at the same time, I think when there is a will, there is a way. And I think right now is the time where it's for people to rise to power in opposition of him. And to me, that's truly inspirational. So I think there will be a place for me out there because I think that. I think optimism is taking me a very far way. And I think that that is what we need. That's what he's taking away from us right now is the power to fight against him. And I think that if we don't allow him to do that, that there is a lot more hope out there. This to connect to the Supreme Court case, it's been really, really interesting to watch this because there are no valid legal arguments for him. There are no valid legal arguments. What he did was actually very illegal. Everybody is aware of it. And so at the end of the day, truly, again and again, it's more a question of power, right?
Yep.
Are
And
there moments,
we go ahead. I'm sorry.
do you think there's moments in your political career where your sense of personal power has allowed for you to actually inspire and create change in moments where you were feeling unhopeful, disillusioned by the world?
Yeah, I think certainly there was, and again, it wasn't too far removed from where you are right now. When I was young, and we were in the middle of a war that seemed senseless to us, and we went through 1968. I was a teenager in 1968, and in the 1960s, I watched a president be assassinated, an attorney general be assassinated. Two civil rights leaders, Martin Luther King Jr. and Medgar Evers, be assassinated. It was a really terrible time. There were riots. They burned down. I lived in a neighborhood in Washington that was burned down in the 1968 riots. And when I moved in 1971, there wasn't a single building that had been replaced. There was still 3 blocks of 14th Street that was totally burned out. All the stores were empty. All the housing was boarded up. So yeah, it was a depressing time, and we wondered. But like you, I mean, I think this is the beauty of being young, and the importance of having young people involved is that the optimism, I was optimistic about the future, like I just said, that I would have a job and that I would have the things that America had to offer, and that I would have a better life than my parents. But yeah, there was a time, when I struggled. And then, of course, I worked for Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale, Dukakis. All those guys got beaten badly until Bill Clinton came along. So we were very depressed. Like, would there ever be a Democrat elected again? But yeah, I think things are cyclical. And that I think different groups of people. For example, when we talk about the good old days, well, who were the good old days good for? Well, they were good for me because I'm a white guy, but they weren't good for women. And they weren't good for black people. When I was in college, I did a research project on women in work. I studied women when I was in college. Please, no good. That's a great straight line. A lot of people have a response to that, but I did. They were the big policy issue was the Equal Rights Amendment, which, by the way, let me point out, I was in college 35, 40 years ago, and the Equal Rights Amendment still hasn't been ratified. But I did a study on women, and 75% of women, 75% of all women in the workforce were found in four professions. They were either nurses, teachers, support help like secretaries and administrative assistants, or domestic workers. And that was it, 75% of women. My older sister, went to the same law school that I think you're interested in, and she was one of five women graduates. Now they graduate more women than they graduate men, or did at one time. So I think it changes, but the as the world turns, things change, and it's better for women today. It's better for people of color today. And that's part of the struggle. That's the appeal that he has to all these white people who are still the majority in America when it comes to money. Maybe not in actual population. I don't know what the figures are these days, but certainly we still have the money and the power. And that's how he says, let's go back to the good days. Yeah, why? Right, I got no problem. Right there, everything was great for me. I got a job, and I got to talk down to the rest of the world, and wasn't that fun? It just wasn't fair. So I think those things changed, and I think things were better for you than they would have been for your mother. And I think that things are better for people of color. So that's another thing that really hurts with all this stuff is to see that maybe some of that's going back, some of that's being pushed back, that there's pushback on that we're the only is I'd like to believe that we're no longer a misogynist country, but then I look and I see that England, Germany, Israel, India. I could go on and on and on about all the countries that have had women leaders, and we've never had a woman leader. So, what's that about? Is that about the Hillary Clinton wasn't as qualified as Donald Trump? Hell, I know people that dropped out of high school that are more qualified than Donald Trump. And she was Secretary of State. I mean, if, imagine being head of a company and getting those two resumes, and hers would say Secretary of State in the White House for 8 years, honors graduate of Yale Law School, and Donald Trump, reality TV star. Which one would you hire? And people didn't like Hillary. She was bitchy, She wasn't I used to hear this all the time from women. It used to kill me. They'd go, "Oh, she's just so bitchy." When you're a man, and that's what she said in her book. She said she had no place to stand. She said if she was tough, she was a bitch. If she was not tough, she was a girl, and so she really didn't have any platform. The same thing you were saying about immigrants. They just don't have the platform from which to actually put up proper resistance. And that's another thing I just want to point out about people that are in this country. If you want to call them illegals, I don't like that term, but undocumented people in this country, they're not out there committing crimes because they want to keep a low profile. Who the hell saying, yeah, you rob a liquor store, you're gonna get on a lot of people's radar. So, these are people that are just working hard, and I got to tell you for a fact, Liberty, that I just moved, and we had to renovate our old house so we could sell it, and we're doing work on our new house. And I want to tell you, 95% of the like 50 workmen that have come into this house all speak English as a second language. They're all, and they work their ass off, and they do great work, and they add significantly to our economy and to our quality of life. And this is not only racist, in my opinion, it's stupid. It's stupid to do this. So, but I'm glad to see people like you that have hope, because
Well, you also inspire me because, I think politics is very ideological. And it's interesting to hear that during your times, things might have been even worse than they are now. Would you say that?
Yeah.
That's really
Not for
interesting.
me, but for you,
Right.
they would have been, yeah.
And so, you asked, do you think that, things are getting really bad right now again? Or is it that, do you think that possibly maybe these white supremacists are losing grip of that ideology that repressed so many people and gave them power for so long? And their reality TV star is just trying to reality TV politics to convince the country that
Yes.
they need to hold on. I think that is a very viable
And that's
thing
a
to be
scary
aware of.
proposition, is it not? I
It
mean,
is.
but yeah.
I mean, when you take a case to the Supreme Court that has no legal backing to actually defend you, or very slim to none, and you're still on trial, it makes me question where your authority is coming from, amongst many other things.
Well, he acts like being elected is the end all be all, and certainly when the founders of the country put the country together, they did say that the vote was the most important thing. It's one of the reasons you and I are on the air, to try to get people to think before they vote. But we have a balance of power in this country, which he ignores. And look, the guy we treated the Democrats, one of the mistakes we made is we treated the guy like he was a joke. And he does some things really well. And one thing he does is he incites people really well. And he plays a race card, and he plays on people's fears. And also, he understands how to manipulate the court system. He understands that you can tie things up in court so long that that you win just because you exhaust the other side, you know, and that's an old tactic. Insurance companies use it sometimes, and other people use it, right? They just tie smaller businesses up until they bankrupt them, and then there's no case anymore. It becomes moot. But so that's something he's very good at, and we need to realize that. And one of the things that bothers me, speaking about my political past with the Democratic Party, is that we as Democrats, I think, realize that all or think that all we have to do is expose Donald Trump for who he is and we'll win. I think that's a miscalculation, because I think many people already know who he is and they just don't care. They
He's
just don't
very
care.
authentic. That's
Yeah,
the
like my grandmother didn't care that the vigilantes were keeping her safe, and you know, the fact that they were ruthless and unlawful, that was between them and the government, or them and God. It wasn't, you know, it had nothing to do with her. She was safe, and that's what she cared about. And I think that's what a lot of other people say, you know. Now, I have a friend who actually was my co-host on the show when it started, and she lived in a border town in Arizona, and it was a mess. It really was a mess. And there were things that had to be done at the border, but he's used this as an excuse to clamp down, and become, you know, well, you said, I call him a fascist. I think he is, but, you know, that doesn't make us any better than the people
It
that on
doesn't.
the other side
You know,
that,
I
you know.
wish I could call him a fascist, but I don't think he has enough political education to really know what that means.
I don't think so
You know what I
either.
mean? I think he has no idea what he's doing. He wants to go back to a better time where his dad was feeding him spoonfuls of money, and I understand him for that. Don't we all want that, Mr. Trump? I wish I had the ability to bankrupt a business, but unfortunately, I can't even have the possibility of doing that. But you know, I think that we need to really stop seeing him as powerful, because even though he is, it's not true power in my eyes. To me, it's just, and that's where I'm stuck. You know, what do you think? Do you think that he is a pa he's definitely powerful, but do you think that he's really in power? I don't know how I feel about that, because to me, he does everything wrong and he does everything illegal, and they're okay with it because he's rich. Does money condone power? Is that the place that we've come to, or is that the place we've been in? What do you think about that?
Well, I think the scary thing that you say there, Liberty, is, you know, I spent a lot of time studying political theory, and Karl Marx said that this was an inevitability of democracy and capitalism, that everybody following their own self-interest would eventually corrupt the society beyond redemption, because we couldn't promote the general interest if everybody was just worried about themselves, and that things would consolidate, and the rich would get richer and the poor would get poorer. And unfortunately, we see that, right? We see that Amazon and Walmart and you know, some of these major corporations have just unbelievable resources. And are getting more powerful and richer every day, as people are getting poorer and poorer. And let me ask you this question, because I think this is a really important question for young people. Does AI scare you? Do you think it's you think it holds more promise than it does liability? Because I see that there's great potential there for corruption, and to add to that consolidation, and to you know, I mean, look, sometimes I'm amazed by it, right? I moved 3 weeks ago, and I got a message last week from my car insurance company, that said the US Post Office has informed us that you've moved and we want your new address. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. And or I buy a shirt online to go with the suit, and the next day I get 20 ads for ties that match the shirt and the suit. Some of it amazes me at the speed at which it works, but I also understand, after being in politics for a long time, that there's a great potential there to corrupt that stuff. And we see, I went to McDonald's yesterday for the first time in 5 years, and guess what? You don't go up to the corner, the counter and order anymore. You punch it in on a damn computer. Took me a half an hour to get a breakfast sandwich because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And you know what? I'm thinking, well, how about all the kids that I knew in high school that worked at McDonald's? What the hell are they doing now? I used to pump gas for a living when I was a kid, and every young guy in the world could get a job pumping gas. Well, unless you live in the state of New Jersey where it's illegal to pump your own gas, those jobs don't exist anymore. You don't even pay a parking lot attendant. You put your little thing in the machine and it spits your card out, it pays. So do you worry about AI, or do you see it as a great, because it's got great potential to cure diseases, and I read somewhere that if you were born today, your chances to live to be 100 years old are over 60% if you're born in an industrialized country. So do you see the great potential for AI, or do you worry about the danger?
Well, I think there's definitely great potential, but at the same time, I think it is the unknown, and it would be very proud of me to not be in fear. I think I'm definitely in fear of the AI, even though I can recognize it has great potential. But it's exactly that. I think that I don't believe that it's going to gain autonomous power over us. I don't think that's viable, but I think that people in power are definitely going to be in charge of what information they're going to be spewing. And that really concerns me because it's like I feel like we're in the second wave, or we're in the fourth wave technically of the internet, but I feel like this is the second wave of social media in a way, where we're seeing, now they came out with an iPhone that's AI automated. So we're seeing a huge takeover of this new form of technology. And who's in charge? Silicon Valley? I have questions, Is AI going to answer those questions? No, probably not. And so I don't know. I'm really concerned. I don't know. I know that there are probably a lot of really good, bright people who are going to be working with it, and it's going to be really good. But I think at the same time, it's going to be really bad, Like balance, like most things in the world right now. I think it's going to be a good against evil, just like politics right now.
Well, and that's a great note to end the show on. Let me just say a few things as we close. And thanks again, Liberty, for adding so much to the content of this show and helping get the word out to people, because I think we do need to make people think again. But I want to tell you, I told you this earlier, we're going to try to get somebody on the show from Jose Andres, his World Central Kitchen organization, which sets up kitchens all over the world. They set up they don't deliver food to people. They set up kitchens so people get the food that they want, and they get to make it for themselves. And it's enduring. It's not something that lasts through a crisis. It goes on and on. They're feeding 500,000 people a day in Gaza, 500,000 people a day. They said if the IDF would get out of the way, that they could serve 1 million meals a day. They've served hundreds of millions of meals in Ukraine. They are now in Jamaica, getting supplies and food to people. So, look, if you're out there looking for a good charity to give to, think about the World Central Kitchen. They could use your help, and they really are doing a lot of good in the world. And also, I'm going to close out the show today with a song for veterans, because the freedom that we have every day and that we enjoy in our lives, was paid for by their sacrifice. So thank you, everybody that's ever worn a uniform. Thank you, Liberty Jones, for being so optimistic and given us all great faith in the future. And here's Lee Greenwood with God Bless the USA. I think we all love our country, and we just have a different attitude, a different opinion on how to save it.
Yeah.
But we'll see you next week. Thanks, Liberty.
Thank you.